As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
The Athletic Football Show is presented by State Farm. Because like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Get a quote today.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. Today's Friday, January 7th. I'm Robert Mays. Joining me today is my good friend Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I feel like I just spoke to you, which we did. But then I also listened to the other podcast this week, the other All-Pro show. So it's like I just been getting my constant Robert. Just need the drip until Sunday night when we do the live show.
So I'm going to lay this out for everybody right now. Shield's going to be joining us a little bit later to do picks. There's been a lot of stuff on the podcast feed this week. We did two All-Pro shows. We did an award show. I mean, there are hours and hours and hours of podcasts that you guys can go check out. It's been a hectic day over here. You guys haven't heard, I don't look at the internet. I've on my fourth company in the last 2 years. So if you can tell me where my health insurance is, I would really appreciate that. I don't even know anymore. Obviously some exciting news. You know, the press releases are out, everything else that, The Athletic has made a big move. And all I have to say about all of that is we're going to continue to try to bring you the best show we possibly can every single day. That's all we can do. And it's exciting. And I'm excited to continue doing that. It's been a really fun ride here so far. Excited to continue that. We love doing this. And that's all I really care about every single day of my life. Every single moment is making this show good. And Nothing is going to change about that. So appreciate you guys listening. Hope you continue to do so.
I know our conversations won't change much, so par for the course.
No, so with it'll all the good stuff we put out this week, with how hectic of a day it's been here, we're recording this on Thursday, and with this week's schedule, there aren't a lot of games that matter, right? No. So there aren't that many games that have huge playoff implications. We're going to hit on a couple of those today, but we're only going to talk about a couple games. It's going to be kind of a truncated version of our Friday show. Hope that's okay with all of you. I'm sure it is. We have a lot of stuff that we'll be digging into come playoff time here over the next couple weeks. Let's start with the game that matters. The game that is a winner-take-all, loser-leaves-town, however you want to frame it, sort of match here between the Chargers and the Raiders. Let's start with when the Chargers have the ball. Yeah, I went back and I watched that game they played in week four earlier today. Chargers had a lot of success on the ground. Mm-hmm. Austin Eckler had a big day. I'm curious, what do you think are the major points that you're looking out for when the Chargers have the ball in this game?
Really how they hold up protection would be the one big thing. You know, that's one thing Raiders do have. We can talk all about the coverages they run, all that, but they're built to get with that pass rush home with Ngakoue and Max Crosby. And honestly, it's the Chargers O-line. I watched the Broncos game from last week, and like Matt Filer was playing well for them. It looks like they kind of got a little more rhythm with their stuff. They looked actually like they're in control. They're using cadence variations, which hasn't been something I've really noticed. Like, it's never popped with the Chargers before. But it seems like, okay, they found kind of like maybe their 201 version of this Lombardi offense and kind of what they are, which is good, which is a good thing that you want to have. Let's just ignore the Texans game. I'm just going to, I'm trying to delete that week out of my brain, that entire thing out of my, like any, like what it was, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Like I'm trying to do that with that game against the Texans for the Chargers. But when they're healthy, it looks so much better. Like you said, Eckler against the Raiders in that week and last week, even if it's sometimes looks hard, you can understand what they're going for when they in the run game. The Broncos defense is nothing to sneeze at. Like it really isn't. Like they do some nice things. So it was tough. But then also it's just, holy shit, Justin Herbert. He's incredible, man. And I know we say this, we sound like a broken record about it, but it's like watching him again against the Broncos and just it's throws you don't appreciate until you kind of really understand what just happened. I tweeted the one where he breaks contain against a free runner, pulling away from a linebacker that runs a 4-5 and doesn't break stride and throws like a 15-yard out route, hits a guy right in the chest. And it was just like, oh, first down. And everyone's just like, okay, good job. It's like a highlight throw. But that, I mean, honestly, that's where it begins and ends for the Chargers is Justin Herbert.
It feels like, you know, if you're looking at that Raiders team, you know, Denzel Perryman has had a pretty good season for them in terms of what they've asked of him, but he is still not somebody you love in space. And I would be really curious how much Eckler on choice routes, just getting that in space. They also use a lot of perimeter runs in that first game, trying to get the ball on the perimeter with wide receivers. You know, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but I can understand that against this team that likes to have guys in the box, that has kind of bigger thumping linebackers like a Perryman. So that part of it, I'm be curious to watch that. The other side of this that I just feel like the Raiders are going to have to tap into a little bit. Teams have had success a little bit this year when they brought some pressure against the Chargers.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we've seen that in a couple different games. The numbers don't totally bear that out. Like Herbert's been about the same against the blitz as he has been against four-man rushes. But it does look harder at times.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at, especially on third down, his numbers on third down are like in another galaxy when you bring four. He's still really good against the blitz on third down, but he's worse than he is against four-man rushes. I just feel like in this game, if the Raiders are going to have a shot, they cannot play static in the ways that we've seen them do it in the past. I think they have to be a little bit more aggressive, especially on those money downs, bringing some extra bodies. Because if you sit back there, he is going to slice and dice you in those moments. We talk about it all the time. Is third down success sticky from season to season, from game to game? It might be with him. Like he might just be so dynamic in those situations that he makes it work. And so I'd like to see them force the issue a little bit and if that's actually the best formula for them in this game.
I thought that's such a great point you brought up, but just with Eckler against the linebackers, how do you keep the running back in the box or in protection?
More Blitz bodies.
Him.
Yep.
More bodies. Make him stay in there. And okay, he's not a great matchup, and Eckler is their best pass protector. I know, again, I sound like a broken record with this stuff, but that's where you see some of the drop-off is I've noticed some teams are like, let's make these other backs protect because their eyes aren't good. The Joshua Kellys.
That showed up in the first game, by the way. I think on the first drive, they tried to run one of those half boots that we love where he just sets up and launches. And Roundtree was in the game, and he just totally whiffed on the edge, and it blew up the entire play. So it's so funny because that stuck in my mind as I rewatched the game today. I was like, God, they need him in there. And I can understand why he wants a break every once in a while, but it seems like he should be in there every single play.
It's so scary. It's such a drop-off. Like it's a handoff, and it's like, okay, they got 4 yards there. Eckler would have got 9. And then, but it's not even just the pass-catching stuff because it's like even – I want to say it was the week I laid into Lombardi, so it was their first Broncos game at Denver. Every time they had a backup running back in there, it was just like, hold on to your hat. Like they had play actions where the safeties were just blowing up the guys. And it was just like, oh God. So teams notice that. So they're going to be not as, I think the Chargers aren't going to be as keen to go like, okay, let's run a heavy play action. And then, you know, let's have that guy pick up the Will linebacker. It's like, I don't think you want that. You're not going to live by that. So it's interesting because it's going to be, the Raiders got to be outside their comfort zone to attack where the Chargers don't want to be, I guess is a good way to put it. But it is remarkable watching Justin Herbert play and the fact that he just never seems to go to the wrong spot. Like that's I was talking to a friend of the pod, Steven Ruiz, and I'm just like, I'm watching him. watching him go through the stuff and like we're just talking about how Herbert just like no matter what, it's just boom. He's just going through the right read. And it's not like his eyes are going left to right pre-snap. Like when I watch Dak and I love watching guys, Brady, you see him pre-snap, you see the stares, you know, the licking the fingers and looking and checking. And it's like Herbert just lines up, stares at one guy and goes, all right, hut, and then just goes. So it's kind of like, if you bring pressure against it, that must be really scary that his eyes go to the right spot every single time. Not like, oh shit, where's my guy going to pop open? But also like the weakness of the Raiders is like, how are they going to cover the Keenan Allens of the world? They don't have a Patrick Surtain out there that can match up man to man over and over and over. So that's, I think it's going to be a gash or be gash game. I think that's what, that's the way the Raiders are going to have to win, is just hope, hey, let's catch Joshua Kelly or Larry Roundtree pass protecting, and let's blitz them. Let's get a guy thumping on them, and let's just hopefully we get some bad eyes from their offensive line. But their Chargers offensive line is playing better, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you have a guy like Crosby who can take over against that side. Yeah. I mean, that is a mismatch. That is one area where the Chargers do have an advantage. On the other side of the ball, I'd be curious to see how the Chargers game plan against this Raiders offense, if Waller is back, and just how they're going to deal with that passing game. If you look at it, it's almost exclusively zone coverage. The last time these two teams played, it was 18% man from the Chargers. I wonder if they lean into that a little bit more, because they've gotten more man-heavy as the season has gone along. Mm-hmm. They haven't been afraid to do that. And with Derwin, you have somebody you'd feel comfortable on Waller.
Yes.
So are you going to – I think if you have certain scenarios where you're trying to have that kind of rat player in the middle against Renfro, where you're just kind of having your eye, the linebacker's eyes on him, and you feel good about Derwin on Waller, feels like that might be a good plan against a team that has these specific pass catching options.
I could see them being in that, because they like, they almost, they have like three versions of nickel almost, kind of mm-hmm. like, or three versions of sub, I should say. And I would, what I'm right in the same wavelength as you on this, because I could see him running their, that robber coverage or hole coverage, however you want to put it, and having Derwin James as the big nickel. Okay, he's manned up. Like, act like, you know, he's the third linebacker, essentially. He's lined up on Waller, and then you could rotate the other safety down and get one of those in-breaking routes and make the Raiders beat you on the outside. Derek Carr, as smart, he's a cerebral guy. He's not going to, like, want to take those go ball throws. And I think that's how the Chargers want to make him beat him. Just go, okay, we're going to make you throw those 50-50 balls over and over and over and just crowd up the middle, not let Hunter Renfro break off one of her guys, Darren Waller, break off one of her guys. But that's what's nice when you run that robber coverage, is that guy's waiting for those over routes. Because that's what the Raiders are kind of built on in their passing game, is condensed splits, quick game, and deep play action shots. It's like that's, it's like there's no intermediate. Like, it's quick game and deep play action shots. And how you can stop that is, okay, man coverage helps a little bit, but then also that robber stuff is meant to catch those over routes. And that's why actually a lot of offenses are having trouble this year, is because of that coverage, and they're trying to find the counters to it.
They also blitzed on 40% of their third downs last time these two teams played. And some of it was interesting. You know, there was a couple different times where they brought Derwin off the edge and they were dropping linebackers back into coverage. And they're not afraid to do that against Derek Carr, which some teams are. You know, some teams are, because he gets really aggressive, and that's where they get some of their chunk plays.
Yep.
So I feel like a little bit more of a in-your-face, we're forcing the issue type of game plan from the Chargers defensively this week would not be surprising to me. Just kind of zooming out a little bit, I want to talk about Derek Carr, because some of the throw he made to Renfro last week against the Colts is like big time stuff. And he has made a lot of big time stuff type of plays this year. Multiple extension, second reaction, I'm going to dagger you sort of throws this season from him. If you were a team that was quarterback needy this offseason, what would you offer for Derek Carr if this team doesn't make the playoffs?
What did Wentz go for? It was a
third and a future first or second, depending on play time.
Depending on it. I mean, like a second and a third, like a couple of those kind of types of picks. Like it depends on where, I mean, obviously it depends on what team, but I think he's worth what Wentz got.
I think he does
so much more than what some of these guys are getting traded for. I mean,
I just think that watching him this year, and
the third is Zay Jones too last week too,
and it's Zay Jones, and that's Zay Jones is watching him do this with Hunter Renfro and Zay Jones last week, and I don't know. I just think watching him and just thinking about, all right, here's the quarterback landscape, and I want to bring this back around to the Chargers or the Raiders in a second, but here's the quarterback landscape. Okay, there's really no options out there. There is not a Matthew Stafford this year. Nope. I'd argue that Derek Carr is probably the closest thing to that, right? Yeah. Like, he's not on that sort of talent level, maybe, but I think he's a pretty darn good quarterback.
Yes.
And if you're a team that is in this middle ground with no clear pathway out, if you're the Browns, for example, right? And after the Mary Kay Cabot report today, it feels like things are headed in the wrong direction, right? So
things escalated quickly.
So if you're the Browns and you feel like, all right, if unless we have an upgrade, we may not want to move on from Baker. I think Derek Carr is a clear upgrade over Baker Mayfield, right?
Absolutely.
Clear. Okay.
Especially how they're built with the line and everything.
So now what is exactly right? Yep. So now what's he worth? If you're Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski and you're sitting there. Or any team that feels like we need an upgrade. If you're the Saints,
Broncos.
If you're the Broncos, well, the Broncos in the division. That's the only because I've thought that multiple times, and every time I do it, it's like they're in the division.
Division. Yep.
But if you're the Saints, if you're the Browns, and you're looking at this, would you give up multiple first round picks to go get Derek Carr?
Oh, it's a great question because now I'm like.
If I were the Browns, he's 30 years old, I'd give up at least one. I'd probably do two.
Wow. I would go.
Just think about the pathways where they're you would at. Have and what your timeline is right now.
It would probably be at least what Wentz got with the upgrade, which is a first and a third. And then it's what's the next pick? Is it another second? Or is it another first?
I think you'd have that's to what think I think about it. I think that's how well he's played this year. I think
especially
he's
without how
really
those teams
good.
Are built,
just he's had zero help.
I know
this is not a good team. They
he's
do
put
not
a lot
have,
on them.
They do not have a great supporting cast. So let's bring this back around. It's kind of why I don't think the Raiders should do it.
Yeah,
because if you can come,
how are they
going
to upgrade it?
It's the same question but flipped. If you're a coach coming in here, or you're the new GM if they fire Mayock, and you're looking at the landscape of this. There's a world where you look at it the same way the Lions did and say, you know what? Appreciate all you've given.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to give you the right opportunity to start over as we start over.
Let's both go on the next thing. Yep.
Totally understandable thought process. Mm-hmm. I got why the Lions did it. I think in the moment, totally understand it. Makes sense. But I think you can also sit there and say, are we really going to get that much better? Like especially the Raiders who do not have the number one pick next offseason, right? Then they probably aren't going to be that bad the way that they've spent money, the way they've built their roster. Do you have more attractive pathways to a quarterback like Derek Carr than just having Derek Carr in the building? So if I were the Raiders, it would take a lot, but that's kind of why I'm framing it this way.
They would have to know if Russell Wilson's available. You know, like that's like the only path.
I just, every time I've thought about the quarterback carousel this offseason and what it might look like, he's the guy I keep coming back to in the sense that I don't think the Raiders are hugely incentivized to trade him, no matter who's in charge there. But that's why I think a team would have to blow them away. And I keep coming back to this idea of, is it worth blowing them away? Like, is it worth being like, listen, here's the Stafford package. How does that sound for you? And is that ultimately worth it? Because I think for some teams, it might be.
He's kind of the parameter. Can you do better than him? That's kind of like where you're at, right? It's like he can win you a game. That's the parameter. Is he better than Derek Carr? Well, no. Okay, then not worth it. You know, it's kind of like that's your cutoff.
And that's why he's the perfect pivot point. It's a fascinating conversation.
God, that's a lot of dominoes that could happen with it.
I just think that would be the guy where I would call them and be like, listen, I know we're willing to do this. Are you willing to do this?
Yep. Especially with this QB class that's coming up. And it's like, that I know. Last year was the year to get a quarterback. I'm going to say it for the 500th time. It was like, that was your year if you needed one. So the teams that didn't make a move for one are like, real. Imagine the Panthers right now, by the way. They went with J.C. Horn, who could still be a fine player, but they could have had Sewell, could have had Surtain. They could have had freaking Justin Fields, could have maybe got Mac Jones, and they went with J.C. Horn. So it's like, huh.
I said this yesterday, and it was actually – part of the reason that I tweeted is because I was thinking about this Carr conversation.
I said Slater. Slater. Yeah, same def.
So, and it, well, especially for where they are right now, the left tackle would probably look pretty good.
Yeah.
So I tweeted about this yesterday. And part of the reason I did it is because I was thinking about Carr. And I was like, what would it take to go get him? I can't believe the Titans got Ryan Tannehill for a fourth round pick. If you look at it over the last few years and kind of how that market has shifted and what it now takes, I'm guarantee you part of that is causation, right? Teams have looked at what happened with that trade and how beneficial it was to the Titans, how transformative it was. And teams with quarterbacks kind of in that mold have been like, you're not getting him for peanuts. Like, that's not how this is going to work. Yep. Really, the only quarterback that's been traded for next to nothing when it comes to draft capital in the last couple of years, if you look at guys who are functional starters, is Teddy. He's the only one that has been traded for next to nothing. But Wentz, Darnold, I mean, Nick Foles got traded for a fourth-round pick.
I know.
And the fact that Ryan Tannehill only cost the Titans a fourth-round pick, they had to give him an extension, you know, a couple years into this. They pay him like a top-flight quarterback now. Fine. Whatever. But in the moment, I mean, when you compare it to everything else and when you compare it to what Carr's market might rightfully look like this spring, because if I were one of those teams and I was kind of staring at a sense of desperation and looking at the rest of the playing field, I would be willing to give up a decent amount for him. And that's why they're in this position, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, he, the plays he has made, the plays he made last week, the plays he could make this week are a huge part of that. And I think that my opinion of him as a quarterback and just my estimation of him, I think, has grown this year. I definitely think that I think more highly of him now than I did at the beginning of this season. I think that's why it adds to some intrigue as we creep toward the offseason here.
Especially, like, not only was the O-line kind of like they kind of decimated them themselves on the O-line.
Yes.
And then it was okay. And then, of course, stuff happened with the receiving options. They're playing like 35-year-old DeSean Jackson out there, like, getting significant
reps. And Waller's been hurt for like weeks.
Waller's been hurt. I mean, Hunter Renfrow, as much as we like him, you know, it's just that him being your number one option isn't an ideal place to be.
It's not even just he's the number one option. He's the only option.
Only option.
Hunter Renfrow and Zay Jones.
Zay Jones, yeah. But honestly, like, what talking about, that's such a good point, is that, like, I think that Tannehill trade was a tipping point for all this, because it's like, in baseball, they went like, okay, how much is a win worth, you know, in war setting and all that. In basketball, it's kind of like, okay, how do we acquire stars? And I think now this, the version of this in football and the NFL is QB tiers almost. How many first rounders is each tier worth? You know, going from Goff to Stafford, okay, we really got to pay the bank, you know, spend a lot to get that. And that's kind of what it is. It's like a bump in tier. Okay, you're not going to get the top 3, 4, or 5 guys. Obviously, those guys are untouchable. But how about those guys that are 7 through 12? And we have a guy that's 20th. You know, okay, that's about 2 tiers. All right. Is that
what it's exactly the situation the Browns are looking at? It's precisely the tier jump and everything else that the Browns are looking at. Yes.
Yep.
So I think that that's going to be something
that's
fascinating to keep an eye on. And he's the guy. I just keep coming back to it. And again, I don't think the Raiders have a ton of incentive to trade him for this exact reason, but I just feel like if you're one of those quarterback needy teams, if you're a fan of one of those teams, that's the guy I'd want Andrew Berry to just be knocking on doors, whoever, whatever team you want, the Saints, any team, that's the guy I keep coming back to.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, one more question I wanted to pose to you in regards to this week's games. Why do the Rams have such a hard time with the Niners? Like, what is it about the Niners offense that just gives them such a problem?
I think it's because, okay, whoever the defense coordinator is now, which is actually even funnier for the Rams, is the fact that it's Raheem Morris, who is Kyle Shanahan's quarterback coach in Atlanta.
Yeah,
like, just think about that. Funny twist of it, but this is how coaches go. Okay, we're about to play so-and-so. Hey, so-and-so worked with him. Hey, what do you remember from that? Oh, okay. Okay, we're going to go through all that stuff. And I think it's whoever the defense coordinator is, of course, is going to talk to McVay. McVay's going to, like, he's doing this. He's doing this. And I think Kyle Shanahan's got a little big brother in him going, like, Sean thinks I'm going to do this. Wait till he sees this shit. Like, I honestly think that. I think it's a human element thing. He thinks that he knows this call. We're going to switch it up on him. Wait till he sees that. Like, I think that's a little bit of what it goes. But honestly, that's what really it is. I also think on the flip side, Shanahan, literally Sean McVay is running his stuff. So it's like he's going to have a feel. He's going to help out whoever his defensive coordinator is and going like, hey, this is what we call this. This is what we call this. Hey, and he's watching the film that week. He's a head coach now. He's not just offensive coordinator watching his. He is, but he's also the head coach. But he's going to watch the other side of the ball and go like, hey, this is okay. This guy does this. This guy does. Hey, they're really last time we played him, they like to do that. Like they, he just has that step ahead where it's just like that little half step, that little 10%, however you want to put it, that he's going to know a little bit more than McVay, as much as we love what McVay does. So I think it's just really, that's what it is. It's familiarity. It's, hey, I'm taking the book that he wrote and I'm putting my little, you know, this is Sean McVay talking. I'm putting my little, you know, translation to it, but he has the Rosetta Stone. So we have to go off of what he originally had. So that's kind of how I look at it. I think it's a big human element type of thing where it's, I know what you know, or that I know what you know kind of thing.
It's one of those things where I think they're such a good match for them, the Niners offense against the Rams defense, because
also a great point.
The Rams offense, the Rams defense is a, we'll give you, it's a take what we give you sort of approach.
And
the
Niners,
they'll take them.
That's what they want. That's what they want.
So I looked at the numbers today. So over the last two seasons, the Niners have had 143 rushing attempts into five or six man boxes. It is the second lowest rate in the entire NFL. Makes sense, right? They're in 21 personnel. They play in a heavy personnel groupings all the time. Teams do not play with light boxes against the Niners. 37 of those 143 have come in three games against the Rams. So 26% of their runs into light boxes have come in three games against the Rams over the last two seasons.
Okay.
They've had relative success. It's not crazy. They're not running over him for 7 yards a carry. It's actually pretty modest. It's like 4.5 yards a carry. But when you're running it 44 times in a game, 4 yards a carry gets you first downs.
Yes, it does.
So
yes,
that's what they were doing. I mean, when you watch these methodical sort of drives, and when you think about the types of runs they've gone to, what was popping up over and over again as I was rewatching that Week 10 game earlier today, a lot of eye candy going one way, runs going back the other way. A ton of just misdirection, split zone, having somebody come across the formation and then coming back. One, to just a little bit of a shiny object, but two, displacing linebackers.
Yep.
I mean, then with the same sort of approach that we saw the Packers take against the Rams last year in the playoffs, we've talked about that set many, many times. Line up and split back, motion one of the backs out, linebacker goes with him, you run into an even lighter box.
Yep.
Same idea, I think, same kind of motivation behind it, what a lot of the Niners stuff was, and that's what they were doing. Debo and Jet, let's run back the other way. You know, somebody else, split back, motion somebody out, let's run into it. And I think that's what they had success with, and I think that's what they go back to. I'm wondering, do you think, for this game specifically, Jimmy or Trey Lance is a more dangerous quarterback for the Rams?
I think Trey Lance, because of extended plays. And you don't want Jimmy sitting in that pocket. If things aren't dialed up like they were in the first game when, I mean, freaking the 49ers, every third down, it was like inbreaker, 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 just hitting one after another. Trey Lance is going to give you that extra kind of little pizzazz on this stuff. But also that's scary, going like, okay, we're going to have this guy making his third start, basically a big game for us, a playoff game essentially for us. That's a little scary. I do want to talk real quick about Trey Lance last week, because it was freaking fun to watch. That dude is like, he's already improved like two tiers, like two bumps since the first start against the Cardinals. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. That happened a lot quicker than I was expecting. Like his motion looks better. His footwork looks better. And I would be excited if I were a 49ers fan, because I would be like, I kind of want to see more of it. But it's kind of you wish this was week 11 instead of week 18, you know, that you're playing it versus their start.
Do you feel like even beyond this game, if they win this game, do you think that their overall ceiling over the next month or next 3 weeks, whatever, into the playoffs, do you think that you would go with Trey Lance and what he provides you over Jimmy Garoppolo?
I would. I would say no risk, no biscuit in their own way.
To see the motivation and mindset behind the move for Lance just play out in real time, right? When you just kind of see it where it's like, all right, this is what they are with Garoppolo. It's very efficient. It's very good. You understand why they wanted to keep him, why they felt comfortable rolling with him all year. But then you just see it plain as day, how the ceiling of the offense changes when Lance is in there. It's just amazing to watch the pushing the ball down the field and just the changing launch points and every aspect of the offense we thought he would provide as a thrower, even beyond what he does with his legs. Yep. It's like, oh yeah, it's so plain and so clear, this exact thought process for why they thought he would give them another gear, then you see the other gear.
They could be any more opposite, like as quarterbacks. It's like they truly are the zig and zag, the yin and yang to each other. Because it's, I mean, I'm telling you, the one naked throw he had, he was working left and he hit the intermediate throw. I talked about it on Sunday. It's like Jimmy would never throw that in a million, billion, gajillion years. And he's hitting it on the second drive, like going working left, like a tough ass throw. He pumped. I didn't even realize he pumped. Like he kind of like shoulder faked and got the guy up in the air and then threw it. It's like Jimmy couldn't do that even if he wanted to. It's not his game. That's not how he wins. He wins by being efficient and perfectly on time. Trey Lance can, the fact that he was doing some of that, he still, sometimes he, to me, he had a couple reads or empty concepts where it looked like he went, maybe, I would say went the wrong way, but picked the B choice instead of the A choice. But that happens sometimes in empty. But the thing is, he was able to make that mistake and then create off of it. And then like, it wasn't like he made the mistake and the play's dead in the water. And that's what Trey Lance gives to you. That's using his legs and his arm strength. He pushes the ball. He just has that extra element. And I know some of that's like, okay, you know, Colton Anu, kind of like, oh, the athletic quarterback, like, or the guy running around. But like his eyes were going to the right place on the majority of those reps. That's only going to get better with more reps, more game time. So it's like, kind of want to ride him a little bit. The fact that he was doing some of the efficient stuff too. It's like, I mean, that's a lot of good stuff. It's funny. You're right. Exactly right. You just could see it happen. It's exactly what it is. You watch that performance against the Texans, you're like, that's why they drafted Trey Lance. It was right there because about five throws he could make that Jimmy wouldn't even dream of.
I wanted to ask you, talk about the kind of over the middle of the field and throws in the first time these two teams played. Is there anything specifically you thought that the Niners were able to go to because of the structure of the Rams defense that you think that they can tweak that this week, or do you think that it was just merely kind of third down variance?
I thought it was because they were – obviously, with the too high stuff, and just if you just close your eyes and picture a quarter shell, I think is the best way to put it, is they isolate. I mean, it's the meme about Kyle Shanahan. It's Stephen Ruiz meme again with the microscope looking at the linebacker. But the same exact thing. That's why I made fun of number 51 for the Rams, is because that's what they isolated. That was the matchup. So I think that's what it was. It was like, that's their weak point. Let's put him in a bind over and over and over and over and over and get the ball out quick to negate the pass rush. I think that's kind of what it was. It's like kind of a twofer. That's why you saw a lot of those quick hitters. There's a little five. So there's two different five-step drops. There's five hitch and throw, and then there's five plant and throw. And a lot of those concepts were five plant and throw concepts, which are basically extended quick game. Glance routes could be like that. Inbreaker, a lot of inbreakers are like that. Quick outs could be like that. So that's probably why it was. It was kind of a twofold. Hey, there's our guy. There's our B word. And then also, I'm sorry. And then also like, hey, the ball gets out quick so we can negate Aaron Donald, Von Miller, everybody that's coming off the edge, like just type stuff like that.
All right. That's all we got. Those are like the only games that matter. The Saints game matters. We've talked about the Saints defense a bunch. I think that's really the only conversation there. You know, looking forward to the playoffs. I think that there's a very good chance they beat the Falcons this week. I think that there's a conversation to be had about whether the Saints defense is enough for them to win a playoff game. We will cross that bridge when we get there. If they win and if the Niners lose, we'll have plenty of time to talk about all of the playoff teams in the lead up to the wild card round next week. But that's all we got for today. There's plenty of stuff for you guys to dig through from this week.
And playoffs are coming.
The playoffs are definitely coming. They are almost here. Playoffs are coming. For now, though,
just wait.
Let's get to show. Nate, it's coming off the rails for you, buddy. 0-3 last week when you need to make up some ground. Walk some people through the saddest moments of your betting experience last week.
Well, I've already compared it to my dad's old Vikings teams that we fell apart at the end of the season. So we've already hit that point where this is my Nate Poole touchdown against in week 17 in Arizona, which I was there in the end zone, by the way, an eighth row, give or take. Yeah, but that's been ingrained in my brain. That's all I can see with this. I think I won't say the Cowboys game, I was like, okay, they're going to tie it up with a field goal. They're the better team. Okay, and then we'll go to overtime to get a touchdown. I had them at 4.5, so the touchdown's good. We're good there. No, they're going to lose by 3. Just losing straight up. The Chiefs, I know I'm just going to bogart this whole segment.
Oh, just run through it. I want to feel the pain.
the Chiefs Bengals when the Chiefs are up double digits, and I'm like, oh baby, this is looking great. And that, well, oh man, if you want to know why I was yelling at the refs, it wasn't that I hate you guys, but hate the Bengals or anything like that. It was just because of this segment right here. It's just going like, are you kidding? It's the same side judge making the horse collar call and the pass interference call on the same drive. That's what gambling does. Is I'm going to start looking up what side judges, like what their names are. I know.
Well,
I know
you sent it to me yesterday, a couple days ago. The win probability added for the Chiefs or for the Bengals in that game was like 60%. Penalties gave them a 60% edge in win probability.
Every team that I bet against, your fans should be very happy that the Tice curse. They should know when once Tice has hit January, it all comes apart.
So you went 0-3 last week.
Yeah, long story short.
You went 0-3 last week. Shield managed to go 1-2, but get his lock wrong. So he got 0 on the week. Nate, you now have to donate to a charity of your choice that is related in some way to the Cowboys or the Cardinals. Folks, if you are from those areas and you have some worthy causes that you would like to suggest for Nate, please do. Yes. Sheil, you didn't lose any ground this week thanks to getting a 0, but you did lose your lock. Who was your lock?
Yeah, I had the Bucks over the Jets there. So anybody who has a good, worthy Jets charity, I will, you know, hit me up and I will be happy to donate. Yeah, that one didn't go so well. I mean, they were what was it, 14.5, and they needed that final drive just to win the game. So that one, you know, and it wasn't really fluky. I mean, really, you know, it wasn't like I got burned by a play here or a play there. So I didn't feel great about that one.
So you are up 6 points heading into week 18 here. We are going to do this through the playoffs. So Nate, you still have some time, but it is slowly starting to run out on you here, buddy. Sheil, why don't you give us your first pick for week 18 here?
Now, what do we think for the playoffs? We'll do like, we'll each do.
Oh, I think we should pick every game. Let's just pick every game
for the playoffs. Beautiful.
Pick every game. Right. It's the playoffs. Might as well.
11-0 dream. Perfect. All right. So, you know, I just have to make sure my game theory is right here and not do anything stupid. I like this. Know what we're doing.
You have to pick first, though. That's the fun part.
I have to pick first. I have not decided. All right. I think they're going to be my lock. I'm going to save them for later.
A couple pros is, right now.
Yeah. This is not my lock, but I'm going to go with steal a page out of the Nate Tice playbook. Maybe try to get in his head and take the Minnesota Vikings -5.5. You're saying, Sheil, that game has no playoff implications. Both coaches could get fired.
That is what I'm on right now.
What the F are you possibly thinking here? But I can explain this. I have great reasons for my picks. They don't always work out, but there's always a reason. What could be more perfect then Kirk Cousins in his last game for Mike Zimmer with nothing on the line, throwing for like 450, 4 touchdowns, just carving them up, padding some stats maybe in garbage time where you look at the end of the season, you go, oh my gosh, Kirk Cousins lit it up. How did that team not make the playoffs? I mean, that's really the only way that this can play out. And so 5.5, you know, I wish it was a little lower. You know, I think it was 3.5, 4.5 when I wrote my column. So it's gone up a little bit, but that's okay. I think the Vikings offense will light it up here. They will win a meaningless game, and it will be kind of the perfect capper to the Cousins-Zimmer era in Minnesota.
Do we know who the Bears quarterback is in this game?
Because Fields got
COVID. Fields is on the COVID list. So does that mean it's Nick Foles?
Oh, man, I feel even better about that.
Well, it was Dalton, right? Is Dalton out?
At this point, I'm
Dalton
honestly
last
not sure.
Week, right? So I would assume it would be Dalton.
We're looking at Robert like, what is it, Robert?
I don't know. I mean, really, how much preparation do you expect me to put into this segment? Look up with a Bears quarterback? This is all about the Vikings. You know, when the team says, it's all about us. We don't care who we're. Yeah, that's what this is about. We'll play them in the parking lot. That's the speech that Mike Zimmer or Kirk Cousins is going to deliver Saturday night for this
if
game.
If you guys can just gauge how interested I am in the end of this Bears season, that's where we are right now. I am so done. Sim to end is all I care about. I did find it funny today that Justin Jefferson was saying that we should be in the playoffs, like we should be one of the best teams. It's like, you should be in the playoffs, Justin. Yeah, like, you are correct. You that's should right. be in the playoffs. What you deserve season. To
you,
be there.
Eric Kendricks.
But and overall, we need a little bit of a reset here. All right, Nate, what do you got for me? What's your first one?
Yeah, I went away. I had a moment where I wanted to go back to week one, what my angles were. And then I was like, well, I didn't do great at the beginning of the season either. I guess I'm a middle end season. I'm after the bye week team.
You really got to tap into that week 12 energy.
Yeah, I know. I got to figure out what I was doing in December. Maybe I was just so stressed out. And so I was like, I got to actually hit some of these. So I got cocky. Having said that, I'm going to go with another maybe head coach, quarterback, potential divorce here, because I guess that's going to be our angle this week. I'm going with the Seahawks plus 6.5 at the Cardinals. And this is a taking the points, taking a Seahawks team that's really been pretty unlucky with some of their stuff. Like, they're not as bad as maybe I thought when I've been rewatching their stuff. They've kind of tapped back into what the Russell Wilson offense is. It doesn't matter who the offense coordinator is. It's been the same since my senior year of college. It's the same offense. That's what works best for Russell. Play action shots of DK Metcalf, mirrored concepts, running the ball. And I think they found rekindled what that formula was. Russell, of course, being healthy. He again mentioned, oh, this is why I have a no trade clause in a press conference. Russ, just ask for a trade. If you're going to do it like this, do like how he's messaging the trade stuff. It's been very funny how he's doing that. But I think it's the same thing. They want to go out on a high note. I think this Cardinals team, I was rewatching that Cowboys-Cardinals game. Wanted to bet the Cowboys again, but I did not. I almost went with my original angle of betting against the Eagles. We saw how far that got me in this season. So I'm going with the going against the Cardinals because rewatching that game, they had a lot of busts. I think the Seahawks team is going to be able to do that. They're running the ball. They're hitting the play-action shots. If the Cardinals want to bring all those pressures and everything, it's Russ. You know, it's Russ can create a little bit still, even if he's not what he used to be. So I think they can punish him in that regard. Taking the points, think it's going to be a little tighter than the 6.5-point line. So Seahawks plus 6.5. Can't wait to regret this one.
Week 18 betting, man. I mean, because you're looking at it, the Cardinals have an incentive to win this game.
Yeah.
Because if they win and the Rams lose, the Cardinals win the division. They host a playoff
game. Which matters.
So there is a real reason for them to play and win this. The Seahawks, I guess pride is the reason. I don't really tap into stuff like that. You have a team very much nearing the end of a miserable year, and you have a Cardinals team that really wants to win this game. You are a brave man, sir. I just
got my Seahawks sweatshirt or Seattle Mariners sweatshirt on. We're repping Seattle today. Let's do it.
Oh my God. I mean, because that's what you have to do in week 18, right? You have to think about motivations and how which teams are going to be engaged. Why would they be? So many different factors. I do not envy either of you. With that in mind, Shio, what's your second one?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. That's a perfect segue. I haven't told you my pick, but one of my routines for this is like, which team is most likely to do the, you know, 1-2-3 Cancun before the kickoff? And I gotta think that, I gotta think the New York Football Giants. I mean, have to be.
They did it 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, they did it a month
there
ago.
There are no golf clubs by guys' lockers, though. Just to be clear,
no.
What a
no golf clubs.
My gosh, he's in the wrong industry, Joe Judge. Unbelievable. What a salesman with that speech. So
would you think he's from Philly, by the way, with that accent?
Well, that's what I said. You know, when I read his comments, I'm like, oh, come on, this guy's terrible. What is he doing? But then I heard the press conference and I was like, if the rest of us can make fun of Brian Kelly, Joe Judge is also allowed to make fun of Brian Kelly. Why is everyone being so harsh about it? So yeah, that kind of moved him towards the, I don't know what that accent, what coaches with accents, what a great way to cap off 2021. But anyway, I'm going to go against Joe Judge and that accent, which is not, I think it's Montgomery County in Philadelphia, which is 20 minutes down the road here. People do not talk like that. And I'm going to take the Washington football team. It got up to -7. I wish it was still -6.5. And I got that extra half point, but this Giants team been outscored by 92 points during their current 5-game losing streak. Last 5 years, team with the fewest wins in the NFL. Giants are tied with the Jets for that. Like, we need to stop talking about this organization, you know, a classy organization. Like, no, this has been 5 years where they have been terrible.
Shiel, you're not in the building, all right? You don't know how much progress they've made. And things are really pointed in the right direction.
Calling them.
You don't know. You don't know the amount of calls that Joe Judge gets from people on other teams right now.
That's the thing. I'm not even sure. Like, the Giants might not even have a coach, because I would expect the top 20, 25 free agents, he might have to be on the horn with them inside when the game kicks off. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things working in my favor here. Washington was competitive last week against the Eagles. You know, I thought their defensive line was really impressive, and that's like the biggest mismatch on paper here. Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne against that New York Giants offensive line, which it feels like has been terrible for, you know, 25 years or so. something at this point. So, you know, I fully expect the Washington to win this. Joe Judge to go on another rant, maybe points to like a punt they had downed inside the, you know, 20 in the third quarter as a reason why everything's trending in the right direction. And, you know,
when it was fourth and three from like the four, from right. the 50 yard
yeah,
line,
right. yeah. the 48. Yeah,
exactly. So I don't know what I'm doing. You know, you probably should not be betting on a game like this, but it kind of goes to my angle that I'm going to have to ditch this angle for the playoffs. But if you can bet against the Urban Meyer coach team, Joe Judge, I mean, there's some of you know what you can take an L. If you lose, you lose. You still feel like you had the pick nailed. So that's kind of my theory here. All that's right, not Nate. My lock, by the way.
It's Nate, what do you got for lock. Me? What's your second one?
I love betting on those who needs stats bowls. That's what it is. Who has contract incentives? That's maybe the angle we should go for.
Good one.
Oh, man, he needs 82 yards to get 500 grand. Okay, that's what you really bet on. Actually, Joe Judge wouldn't care because they're going, you know.
Yeah, like you could go the other way. It's like, yeah. Oh man, he's not touching the ball today.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I'm actually going with a game that actually means something. So not because rather than make every game exciting by gambling on the ones that don't count, let's gamble on the one that does count because that always works out for me as well. I'm going to go with the Rams -4.5 hosting the 49ers. And really, this is great because this is one of the few times that we've done this segment after we already recorded, Robert. So
that's true. We have continuity today.
So continuity is great here. I don't have to have like a person fact checking me going like, oh, didn't you say that earlier? Okay, but the Rams, I just think this is a great matchup for them. Really, even as much as I like Trey Lance, it is still a rookie quarterback. You don't know if he's starting, that's volatile. You also have Jimmy G. If he's starting, he has the torn ligament in his hand. Also scary. I think this Rams team, the offense, again, has to withstand the Stafford dummy plays, but it's still a pretty good freaking offense. Like, they are. It's just, I think we expected the world out of them, and the fact that they're just good to very good, it's like, oh, wow. They're 12-4 right now, this Rams team. You would think they're 9-7 going into Week 18, how we talk about them. Maybe it's just, like I said, I had high expectations for them. They still have a great defensive front. Guys that can get him after Aaron Donald, still Aaron Donald, Von Miller, still Von Miller. He's really coming into his own, especially on the run defense, which I think is going to be a big, that's when he was first there. It took a while, I feel like, to get him going, like to figure out exactly how to utilize him. I think it's like he's starting to show up a little bit. So I'm going to just take the Rams -4.5. Both these teams have something to play for. I think it's going to be a great game. But I really just think this Rams team is going to try and make a statement because they have something to win. Like they want to win this game. Just
same thing we said about the Cardinals, right? Yep. I mean, they have a huge incentive to win this game.
Correct.
Being able to host a playoff game, that's a big leg up over having to go on the road, even if it doesn't seem like a huge difference with only one team having the bye. All right, Shiel. Your lock, buddy.
If I wanted to apply some game theory, I think I would switch my pick here. But you know what? It's Week 18. We want fireworks. My lock, I'm taking the other side of that game.
I'm taking the love it.
So, 49ers +4.5. You're right, Nate. I mean, I feel like I've been ripping this Rams team. And then you look, I mean, even the advanced stats, the EPA per drive, Stafford's numbers, you're like, they're like top, you know, 5, 6, 7 and everything. But I can't hide what my eyes tell me, and especially this year, in a year where it's like all, you know, a lot of the stats I feel like are wonky. You don't know who played what week. And I just don't trust that team. I mean, 2019 comes down to the wire last week against that Ravens team. They've got these Stafford's turned the ball over 6 times in the last 2 weeks. Now, maybe there's some flukiness to that. That's fine. But I kind of feel like if you're the 49ers, I mean, you've got some playmakers on defense. You're not great at cornerback, but you've got some dudes there in the front seven where you can, you know, potentially force a Matthew Stafford turnover there. Kyle Shanahan's beaten McVay 5 times in a row, I think. And you just, I mean, I don't know who's starting a quarterback, so it's probably a stupid one to take here. You know, I think Garoppolo.
It's probably pretty telling, though, right? That you're comfortable doing this without knowing who's starting a quarterback.
Yeah, I'm kind of trusting in the play caller here that he's, you know, he'll sort of figure it out based on whichever guy. Really, I just feel like this has the feel of a tight, close field goal game. Now, that could end up being a touchdown game. And I lose it. But I mean, talk about having something to play for, you know, 49ers stuff to win to get in here. I mean, if they lose here and the Saints win, they're not in the playoffs. And so they're as motivated, if not more motivated, than the Rams should be in this situation. And so I'm just kind of putting the faith in their, you know, blue chip players, the Kittles, the Debos, the Fred Warners, the Bosas, the Armsteads. Like, you know, you should be able to keep this game competitive and give yourself a chance to win regardless who's playing quarterback. So we'll be invested in this game. So this could be what I would lose one, you would win one. So you would pick up two just on this game potentially if the Rams cover the 4.5. So
and then you wouldn't get your lock, and he potentially could. So that's another
correct.
A ton more, a lot more points sitting there on the table.
Lot on the board, baby.
This is the Nate Sounds Smart Bowl, because it's either my pick comes in or the first segment that Robert and I did talk about Shanahan's advantage that we always have against the Rams sounds smart. So here we go.
Win-win. I love the win-win.
The one thing I'd look at in this game, if you look at what the Rams have really had to lean on over the last month or so, what Sony Michel has given them and just how they've been able to function with the ground game has been huge. It's kind of been a rock for them as they've had to worry about what Stafford is. Niners' run defense is really good. I mean, that is the best thing they do on that side of the ball. They've been really good in the front seven this year, stopping teams on the ground. And if the Rams don't have that, and you suddenly take away that kind of security blanket little pillow that they've had over the last month or so as Stafford struggled, we'll see what that ends up looking like. All right.
I already hate my bet.
Yeah, what you just said with the take thing, it's so funny because you're probably the only one I could commiserate with about this, because like last week I'm watching Cowboys Cardinals and I'm going, well, I picked the Cowboys in my column. I would like to be above 500 this week. But on the other hand, Nate picked the Cowboys and he's got three. All right, it's kind of a win. All right, Cardinals won. Oh, that's okay.
I was the number one gangrene fan on Sunday.
Dumbest football
me and Fireman Ed, baby. Fireman Ed. That was me. I was Fireman Nate. I was leading the charge.
You guys have too many rooting interests.
Yes, exactly. It's like having eight fantasy teams.
Nate, what do you got for me, buddy? What's your last one?
Okay, so my lukewarm lock, talking about teams, something to play for, but this is going to be my lukewarm lock. I'm going to go with the Patriots -6.5 at the Dolphins. I think Bill Belichick remembers week one. Like, this is a guy that we talk about, this team's going to rest this guy. This team's going to rest guy. Bill Belichick doesn't care. He still has padded practices on Wednesday. Like, this guy is going to come into this week. And
they have incentive. If they win, the Bills lose, they still win the division.
And they know who I picked for NFC East winner or AFC East winner. They know who I bet on at the beginning of the year.
They know what's at stake.
They know what's at stake, exactly. But I just think this Patriots team, even if the offense is kind of, I wouldn't say hit a wall or anything like that, maybe hit some limitations what they have, I think this is one team that's prepped for what the Dolphins want to do to them. With the pressures, with the 6-1 fronts, all the type of stuff. And they also have great tape from last week against the Titans about what another way to kind of attack them, because they use similar formations that the Titans do. I also just think on the flip side that this Patriots defense is made to go against what the Dolphins want to do, playing man, playing soft zone, or playing the high cover two stuff on second and long, and just pushing that pocket on Tua and making Tua have to make throws over the middle. I think that this is a team that's real. Like, they're going to do that one double coverage and they're going to go on Jalen Waddle. I made the joke that it's the Waddle ratio instead of the Randy ratio. I don't know how else to put it. The Waddle ratio with the W. We've hit this point, people. but I think that's what Belichick does. He figures out what your number one target is, doubles him, and then he plays JC Jackson on the other guy. And it's like, for this, it would be, you know, whoever they want to put it on, Gesicki, whatever. But it's like, that's what's going to happen. I could see that unfolding, that RPO game, the fun stuff. Belichick thrives on destroying that stuff, rallying top, bottom. I don't like it.
If you're a gimmicky offense, the gimmick tends to disappear when you play against this team on defense.
It's the worst defense to go against, because they're going to be dialed in on what you do. So 6.5 was a little rich. Preferred it like 4.5, five maybe, but I'm gonna take it. It's under a touchdown. I know it's at Miami. It's not gonna be a weather thing. Mac Jones is gonna throw the ball more than three times. So this is my lukewarm lock. I'm betting on Bill Belichick. I'm betting on the advantage that they have going against his former mentee in Brian Flores.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the other side of that game, because my question with the Patriots has been, like, I know they made all these moves in free agency, but like, look at who Mac Jones is throwing to in the, like, when you're facing a team that can just line up and play man coverage, are those guys, I like a Kendrick Bourne. Nate, listen, I know you're driving, you've been driving. That's like your brand now. I mean, I just see random Kendrick Bourne tweets just tagging Nate all over my timeline. And he's a good player, but I look at that whole group and it's like, are they going to be able to give Mac Jones enough opportunities in the passing game? Now, what you said is true. It might not matter, because the Patriots might just get a defensive touchdown and the Dolphins might
run the ball 40 times.
Anything. Yeah. So it might be a low scoring
game. He still covered
that, but it's kind of like a sneaky, interesting thing I want to watch as we look ahead to the playoffs. How does that passing game look against this Dolphins defense? So, it's kind of another fun thing to watch in that game.
Biggest looming question about New England is what their pass catching options might look like, and just those moments, high leverage moments, and what Mac Jones looks like. You know, as we kind of dig into those conversations, which we'll have a lot of here over the next week, is where are weaknesses? What are going to hold teams back? Why could they win a playoff game? And I think that's the biggest one with New England. Who's going to get open when it matters? Who's going to make a play when it matters? All right, guys, that's all we got. That's all we got for this week's pick segment. Sincerely appreciate you guys sticking around for this. Again, we will be back all throughout the playoffs. Hopefully it's a little bit closer tonight. Hopefully you squeeze the gap here a little bit.
I think so. I think it's
going
to be tight going into the postseason.
Yeah, listen,
I don't know.
Big potential week with those locks. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This was the Athletic Football Show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.